The scripture is read from 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 1 through 5. Therefore, since Christ suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same mind, for he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, that he no longer should live the rest of his time in the flesh for the lust of men, but for the will of God. For we have spent enough of our past lifetime in doing the will of the Gentiles, when we walked in lewdness, lust, drunkenness, reveries, drinking, parties, and abominable idolatries. In regard to these, they think it strange that you do not run with them in the same flood of dissipation, speaking evil of you. They will give an account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead.
This afternoon, titled our lesson that we're going to be looking at, recreational drug use. And so kind of go through the process here a little bit about what we're looking at and considering. Let me first pose a question. Should Christians participate in such activities? Now, it's almost to ask the question is to answer the question. I think it's self-evident, axiomatic, that the very idea of recreational drug use is something that a Christian ought to not involve themselves in. Just the terminology sort of stands out with us, doesn't it? It sort of kind of puts before us this idea of what would be something that would be wrong, something that one would not want to do. I appreciate Joshua leading the hymns about the idea of pure in heart, the idea of us being a distinctive, separate people, the concept of recreational drug use. I think, again, it just simply stands out as something that would be avoided. Galatians 5 and verse 20, when you're going through there, the works of the flesh include some things called sorcery and sometimes different translations, witchcraft. This comes from the Greek word from which we get pharmaceutical. The idea of drugs, of course, pharmacies and the drugs that we would have. And so the thought is that with these particular activities, it involved drug use for the purposes of carrying on some of these things, sorcery and witchcraft, and you think about the witch's brew, just illustrative of this principle. Well, it comes from this idea of that which is certainly to be seen as relates to pharmaceutical industry, and there's a proper place for that, but there's a misuse that's also observable, and that's where this comes from, this idea. So I just make that observation that drugs are dealt with or mentioned in some ways, referred to in some aspects of it, and certainly in this terminology as it relates to the works of the flesh, it comes out. Let me notice some things with you then. First of all, let's define our terms. Definition of recreational drug, a drug such as cocaine, marijuana, methamphetamine. You can also throw in there heroin. There's these designer drugs that you begin to hear about. Designer drugs is where they've taken and altered some properties and some ways in which they've now created some additional drug type of things that are out there that you hear about. You can note that they describe these things, and out there the police departments and people warn about various kinds of things associated with this. It's used without medical justification. There are two ways that drugs are used. They'll fall in one of two categories. It's either medicinal or it's recreational. There's no alternative to those two, one or the other. For its psychoactive effects has to do with mind altering. It creates then the mind, it affects the mind, the way the mind functions, the way the mind thinks, and there are behavioral aspects of it that come out of this because the mind has been adversely affected. Often the belief that occasional use of such substance is not habit forming or addictive. That's Merriam-Webster Dictionary. I think that's a fair assessment of what we're talking about, looking at. I think it capsulizes the concept very clearly. Let me notice some things with you. Marijuana. So I'm going to talk about marijuana. Cocaine or heroin, methamphetamines, those types of things, these designer drugs. You know, you could almost spend a half an hour just listing all the different kinds of drugs if you look at all the categories, subdivisions, etc., if you start going through a list. But marijuana kind of stands out because that's what I'm going to focus upon. I want to talk about it from the standpoint, the idea of occasional use. We certainly are beginning to see more and more the idea of marijuana in our society. It's something that's been ongoing for a period of time, but it's become more prevalent in some respects, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Not habit-forming or addictive. The idea that, okay, it's something that you can do recreationally. It's not going to be something that you're going to become addicted to, or at least that's the objective there. It's the idea that it's not habit-forming, at least if you take it in moderation. I'll just do it. The circumstances associated with it, that I can do this type of activity, and it's not adverse. It's not going to be something that's harmful or wrong as long as I do it in the right way, in a recreational sense. Let me go through this, and we start with legal. Something legal, and it's become legal, hasn't it, more and more so, and that's the trend. The ultimate outcome is going to be, because I don't see any reversing it ultimately, there's still areas where it's illegal, but it's been legalized in various places. It started off with some instances where you have things associated with it that people have kind of been involved with these things, and now they've gone to the part where they're legalizing it and selling it. Now, there is a medicinal use and some things that might be described or talked about. If it's medicinal, the effects that are done while it's a controlled environment, under medical supervision. You even have some aspects of this hemp. There's talk about these types of things where you have certain kinds of drugs that are based on this, or hemp has other uses that are legitimately done. And again, not describing that type of thing. There's, when you look at this, there may be some legitimate means and ways in which it's done. We're talking about recreational. Once again, let me emphasize that point. Recreational, something legal, because it's legal, doesn't make it biblically right, correct? We understand that principle. I'm not going to try to delve into it extensively. I said that before. This is just something we recognize to be true. Beneficial effects. There are those that argue it's got beneficial effects. You go and it's recreational. You sit back. It gives you a sense of well-being in some cases without, you know, making do all kinds of odd things, at least the way they describe it, when you do it in moderation. When you just simply are in this thing, it's sort of a way in which one can sort of develop some ideas of relaxation and things of this nature. Makes you feel euphoric in some instances without, again, just builds up a little bit. People make such arguments. You can go look online or go to some other reference points, and they'll describe all these different aspects that might be even described in some ways that are nice and good and makes people, helps them in various ways, intention relieving, such terminology, right? Well, you put that at opposite with the harmful adverse consequences. And that list is huge and lengthy. You start going through it. I am not going to stand up here and spend a goodly amount of time trying to go through all the different adverse consequences associated with marijuana. It's easily noted. A lot of people have all kinds of issues and problems and difficulties associated with marijuana. It's often an introductory drug to more harsh drugs, at least from a standpoint of how it impacts people's lives. You can go through all that type of arrangement. One of the things that they're discovering, just illustrative of this principle, is the fact that people that smoke the marijuana and they're doing these kinds of things or having that within their system, it's like situations in which they're driving, some of their thought processes have been hindered. And so now they're trying to figure out how they can measure that so that you're pulled over because you're not driving very carefully, there's something wrong, and so they come up there and there's this situation in which they have been taking and using marijuana. All kinds of things, and I can, if you look at this, what supposedly these beneficial effects are far outweighed by the harmful consequences of marijuana. Used in moderation. I'm just going to do it a little bit. Often leads to excessive addictive behavior. I mean, it's a given. It's a reality that people start going through this process, and the idea that they're using it, they have this idea, I'm just going to do it a little bit. I just want the sensation I get, just if I have some of it, but not a great deal. And then the next thing you know, that sense of what they want to get, of that well-being, the euphoric disposition, the relaxing, however you want to describe it, they find that they need more of it to accommodate and get to that same degree that they feel that sense. And it's been demonstrably shown that marijuana is addictive. It has these impacts. Sometimes it's physical as well as psychological as it relates to these things. No societal stigma. You get to a certain point, what stigma there has been, it's legal now, has then kind of been set aside. It's, you know, what used to be something that you avoided is now accepted. So it kind of creeps into the societal disposition, and then people begin to come along, and somebody says, I can't imagine Christians defending that or participating in that. Well, I would hope that that's the case, but you know something? All the years that I've been preaching and things, there's a lot of things I thought wasn't going to be the case, and when you start getting down the stream of time, I wouldn't have thought marijuana was going to be legalized in my lifetime, though I knew that it was being used around. You can go back to the 60s and 70s. I grew up in a time period. The arguments that were made for marijuana use, I've heard those way back there. You know, it was illegal. There was an incident that I'll share with you when I was with some other individuals and just gathering and a setting, and there was a discussion that came up. And one of the people there said about marijuana and was trying to argue for marijuana and its use recreationally, you know, just kind of things, all this type of stuff. Comes along there and says, it's no worse than drinking alcohol. That was the argument. No worse than drinking alcohol. And you know what? As he went through and discussed it, and there was this conversation in this setting and things, and I spoke up. And I said, do y'all know what alcohol does? Do you realize the impact of alcohol? And you start looking at that type of thing. When you say it's no worse than alcohol, the better way to describe it is as bad as alcohol. Can you imagine going over to somebody's house that's a Christian and deciding we're going to have a gathering, we're going to sit there, and somebody brings out some food and you're socializing, they bring out certain drinks, you're drinking some pop or coffee or tea or whatever, water or things, and you're enjoying each other. Somebody comes out and says, let's have some, well, I've got some marijuana here. We're just going to enjoy ourselves with marijuana. Can you fathom that type of an arrangement where that would be something that would be done? Let me say, I hate to suggest this, but I can believe that there are going to be Christians, because when society begins to accept something, there'll be Christians that begin to argue for its acceptance. They'll begin to defend it on various ways and means and methods. They will engage in certain practices themselves because they seek those types of opportunities. They desire certain things, and they can justify it in their mind this way. So somebody starts arguing about that type of situation. You start looking at this. Why would you do that? What possibly would be advantageous? Again, setting aside the medicinal aspects that might be legitimately done in a controlled environment for a particular purpose, are some of these types of things that come from these types of plants that can be used that are not even having these qualities from the standpoint of mind altering, but can be used from the perspective of that which can be applied to a person in a way that is helpful to them. That's fine. Again, we're not talking medicinal. We're talking about recreational. I just want to do it because it does something for me that I think is good. And I'm going to share that with others, and I'm going to defend that. Kind of absurd, isn't it? It creates a disposition that's troubling. Now, that's my introduction. Because I already kind of hinted at where we're actually going to go with this. One day this may be much more extensive, because if you start running across this in times when people are starting to try to argue this, then we'll have to get into it in more detail. What about social drinking? First, let me say, the idea of social drinking is somewhat a misnomer, in the sense that we use that terminology. But the reality, that's recreational drug use. Okay? Just start with that premise. I think we kind of categorize things. Here's drugs. Here's drinking. Then we say, well, you know, there's this idea of drugs that are medicinal, and then there's the drugs that are recreational, and then social drinking is a separate category all to itself. This is from Wikipedia, but let me suggest to you that it's Wikipedia that comes from these various medical references. It goes back and looks at these things and kind of consolidates some things, and when I was looking at the different ways of this, this kind of captured the essence of the whole point. Alcohol is a drug. It's a drug. To kind of think, oh, alcohol and drugs, I think does a disservice to the way that we're to look at it. And once we start looking at this, if you could put it in the same category and start thinking about it from a standpoint of marijuana, for example, and some of these other types of drugs, I think we can put it in proper perspective. Also known by its chemical name, ethanol. It is a psychoactive substance. Where have we heard that before? Do you remember previously when looking at recreational drugs, the definition? Psychoactive substance, the same terminology. It affects the mind and the thinking and thus the behavior. It's the active ingredient in drinks such as beer, wine, distilled spirits, hard liquor, in parentheses. It is one of the oldest and most common recreational substances, causing the characteristic effects of alcohol, intoxication, drunkenness. Okay? I think that's, a very good characterization of the entirety of the approach. If we approach something in the right way, it helps clarify some matters. It gives us some sense of understanding and appreciation. I would submit to you that social drinking, that terminology, the recreational drug use, that the idea of marijuana and social drinking or alcohol use like that, the recreational drugs, alcohol, stand or fall together as far as how a Christian is supposed to approach it and think about it. Now, like I said, one of these days somebody may have them standing together. You know, that's sad to say, but at this point in time, at least I can make the observation that we would look at this and certainly see most everybody that this is something that would not be desirable to encourage people to participate in the engaging of marijuana use. And so I would submit to you, I don't want to go that way and encourage people to engage in social drinking or recreational drug use having to do with alcohol. Once you start with that premise, think about the consequences and look at this arrangement. Let's notice some things. Should Christians participate in social drinking? Well, not medical reasons. In 2 Timothy 5:23, you have, and I think I might have put that down incorrectly, whether I got that in the passage, but be that as it may, the reference that I have making to it has to do with, that's what I thought. There's not five chapters that should be 1 Timothy 5 and verse 23. So just as a reference point there, the 1 Timothy, where Paul tells Timothy to take a little wine for his stomach's sake. What's he saying there? There's a couple of things that stand out immediately. Paul is encouraging Timothy to do something that he seems reluctant to do, right? There would be no reason to do it if it wasn't for the fact that to encourage him, unless Timothy saw that there was something there that should be avoided. But he says, do it for your stomach's sake. So medicinal purposes are under consideration here. So you think about it from that standpoint. So Paul does, we understand that alcohol for medicinal reasons can be legitimate. There are individuals in times past, of course we have a lot more types of medications available to us in various forms and differing ways through that pharmaceutical thing that we talk about. But there was a time in the past where people sometimes would have some kind of liquor that they would have available to them that they wouldn't use for recreational purposes. They just simply pull it out and make some kind of concoction to help somebody with some kind of illness. It was old, they had it hidden away, but they'd pull it out. There are, for example, cough syrups that at least in times past, and again, some of these have kind of been altered a little bit because of other types of medications or drugs that could be perhaps more effective. But you go and look at some of the kinds of cough syrups of other things like that, and part of the base of it was alcohol. You know, you didn't take it to drink it for recreational purposes. You did it because you had this cough or congestion and other things. So you would do that in order to handle some medical issue. You weren't sitting around drinking it in a social sense or what. So the idea of medical purposes, again, medicinal, you know, there's a legitimacy. There are all kinds of plants available that have a valuable use and then a misuse or abuse. So drinking can certainly fall into that category. Paul telling Timothy, take a little wine for your stomach's sake. It's legal. Romans 13. Go back to the same argumentation with now as you go through with marijuana. Marijuana is becoming more and more legalized, and that's the trend. As I said, I don't see it being turned back. That's going ahead strong toward that ultimate thing where everybody in all the states and it's going to become a situation in which you find that it's going to have a legal use from a standpoint of being recognized but no longer a criminal act. Romans 13, but we follow the laws of the land. There was a time we would oppose something just on that, potentially on that basis, but that's not sufficiently going to deal with these types of subjects. That's one element, but just because it's legal doesn't make it right. Drunkenness is sinful. So just taking that's using it to that excessiveness and the point of that going beyond, well, it's sinful. Many verses of scriptures, Romans 13:13, for example, Romans 13:13 talks about drunkenness. You go back to what we mentioned in Galatians 5 about the works of the flesh, drunkenness is listed among those, right? Proverbs 23, there's a description of the person who gets drunk. And I'd encourage you to go back and read that. It describes a person that, you know, goes through this type of thing, loses all sense about behavior and conduct, gets themselves physically ill as a result of these things and having all these adverse effects, and then repeating the process. After going through all that, and they still go back to the stuff. Of course, the drunkenness and addictions, people point out that they're not the same. Well, that's true. Some people can do this, they'll get drunk and they're not addicted, but there's a point in time where you transition into some areas. And drunkenness in and of itself is sinful and wrong, even if you're not addicted to it. The recreational is condemned. You see, and so pausing there for just a moment, let's consider, do I have to get all the way to being fully drunk? And by the way, one of the aspects, both marijuana and alcohol, is that it begins to affect the ability to reason and rationally think. And even knowing at what point I've crossed that line and the circumstances in which I've become then in that impaired condition and that I'm doing these types of things that are wrong, that my judgment is already affected. And I don't even necessarily know when I've crossed that line. That's one of the things that's the idea, that psychoactive element to it. I'm drinking and now I've lost any sense. And you don't have to be all that place where you got the imagery of the person in the party with the lampshade on their heads dancing around, don't even remember what they've done, to get into that circumstance in which you now have that situation in which a person's impaired and not rationally thinking and doing things they otherwise would not do. Their inhibitions are let down. Their ability to then handle things in an appropriate way is going to then be impaired. So back in our scripture reading, notice what it says. When it goes through this, it discusses it from the standpoint of the Gentiles and lewdness and lust and drunkenness. So he says, in past times you did these things. But now you've changed, you're altered, that way in which you just go about doing things. He talks about drunkenness. Oh, there it is. So now drunkenness is condemned. There's another passage, Romans 13:13. Here's this. Here's a description of people in a drunken stupor in Proverbs 23. Now you come along here and you're talking about drunkenness. Okay, that's condemned. Revelries, this idea of the activities associated with the matters of revelry and behavior, and then drinking parties that connect to this drunkenness and revelries and the occasions of this thing. He says drinking parties, sitting around drinking. The social interaction, this recreational activity. You know, going back to this for just a moment, this idea about pulling out marijuana in order then to participate in that. Now I'm going to pull out drinks, alcohol of various kinds and various types, and we're going to sit around and we're going to drink Christians together. I'm going to hand you that, and you're going to be with me. I'm going to go to the bar. Let's go to the bar together, see? You know, there's these places that are gatherings for smoking marijuana, or at least there has been these various places. Well, let's go over here to that. Well, instead of that, we'll just go over to the bar. We'll sit there. We'll drink in moderation. We'll drink and interact like this in this setting and situation. Isn't that nice for us to have that kind of way in which we can socialize one with the other? Drinking parties. In regard to this, they think it's strange that you not run with them in the same flood of dissipation, speaking evil of you. Well, I'm not going to do those types of things anymore that I used to do. I'm not going to be involved in revelries and these partyings and these behaviors and these conducts and interaction of this nature. I'm not going to go off with y'all and do these types of things because that's not appropriate. That's not the way a Christian behaves. And so they speak evil of you. You are now condemning their lifestyle by the fact that you no longer participate in it. And so that upsets them to the point that they have to denounce you. That's the gist and the idea of this. They will give an account to him who is able to judge the living and the dead. Negative influence. What are we talking about these things? The negative influence. I'm a light unto the world. And that's what's talked about here too. The idea that no longer involved in this, well, what am I doing now? I'm going to be a positive influence on those people around about me. I'm not going to be participating in things that actually call attention to it. And the idea that a Christian, I'm going to sit down and teach somebody the gospel of Jesus Christ over a beer, over a drink of some variety, or smoking pot. I'm going to teach them the gospel. Because this is a good setting in order to accommodate that thought process. See, let our light so shine before men that they may see our good works and glorify our Father who is in heaven. In Romans chapter 14, 21, let's take just a moment here to look at that verse. And in Romans chapter 14, it's dealing with this idea of how we treat one another and our regard for one another. So it's not just the world that we're certainly wanting to influence properly, but we have a regard for each other and we want to set proper examples for each other and the dangers involved with that. So in Romans 14 and 21, it is good neither to eat meat nor drink wine nor do anything by which your brother stumbles or is offended or is made weak. Now, it describes this, and I want to delve into it just for a moment, a little bit, because there's some things associated with this idea that I think we need to reflect upon. It's certainly talking about influence, but there's some things, too, about using this phraseology about the eating of meats and the drinking of wine. There are things that, as I'm going along and just illustrative of the idea, if I were going to use, as Paul kind of talked to Timothy about medicinal use, that I would need to be careful that I do not adversely influence somebody, even in a legitimate use, by going over and purchasing some alcohol and putting it away in my house, and all I'm going to do is use it because there's occasions or times that might be appropriate like that. Because if that's going to adversely affect them, I don't want to be putting them in a position that they think I'm saying it's okay to drink from a standpoint of social or recreational activities. That's one possible element associated with it. It's certainly an application that one needs to think about. What kind of example and influence? Let me also say in the context here of this, talking about this wine and the idea, there's some verses, and I'm going to make reference to some things about wine and its use in Scripture and how it's employed. Talk about this thing as it relates then to the idea of the context. The context is dealing with these situations in which people came from various backgrounds. The Jews came from the Mosaic Law, and as they transitioned into Christianity, some of the things that they were prohibited from doing or things about certain types of eating of meats, the things associated with that were limited in regard to it. Some wrestle with the idea that it's okay to eat those meats now that they couldn't previously. You follow along with over additionally 1 Corinthians 8, which also transitions into Romans 14, that's dealing with the similar thought process and being the way in which we conduct ourselves one with the other and being concerned for one another, not being a stumbling block to each other, not having our conscience then adversely affected by doing things. That you look over there in 1 Corinthians 8 and tie this in with this, there was idolatry associated with the Gentiles and their worship and heathenism. And among those things, they would offer to, there was offered to the idols this meat, and the meat would be sold instead of being consumed, burned up, as we think about many sacrifices. It would be offered, but then it would be sold. And that's what's described in many instances. And Romans 14 kind of takes into account of the multiplicity of different things involved with this, be whether it's Jews or whether it's Gentiles coming, and even our working together in this capacity when you come from these different backgrounds, and how I need to be careful one with the other. Among the things was not just the meats, but there were drink that was offered, and drinks that would be involved with this type of thing. So the idea of sacrifice or purchasing, or these things that would be associated with idolatry, or certain types of religious practices that would be connected with these backgrounds and things. So you look at these things to transition and immediately think that, oh, this is something to do with alcoholic beverages and drinking wine. What I want us to appreciate, we don't just take these verses and cull them out of where they're at and try to use them to justify something when we have a very specific prohibition and warnings associated with these types of behaviors in other places. I want to start with where the Scriptures put us, and then as I evaluate and look at these other places of Scriptures, what do I learn from this? It doesn't negate what we've already looked at, that is very explicit in nature, and trying to then make something okay by taking something that is not really discussing it in that way and trying to then transition over to it is a misuse of God's Word. Let me show you something here. The term wine is used in a more general sense in the Bible for grape juice and is not always referring to alcoholic beverages which are intoxicating. I grant you it does do that. And it discusses it in negative ways. When you start looking at the instances and occasions when the intoxicating drink is used, it's not used in a positive sense. It doesn't put out there something that is something favorable. Somebody starts utilizing that type of thing and they use it to excess and they get drunk, or they use it and impairs their judgment. Time and again, you look at some of the Old Testament characters, for example, and some of the problems they got into because of alcohol. Some of the outstanding characters of the Old Testament, just think about the idea of Noah after the flood. He certainly did something he wouldn't have normally done by when he became intoxicated that way with through the wine. You remember Lot? Of course, he was used to do this thing and the reprehensible behavior that came out of that. Something he would never have done had he not been under the influence of alcohol. See, you start looking at these things. In Isaiah 65 and verse 8, it talks about the cluster, the grapes, the vine, and the wine that's on there. The term is a general term. We think in our society about wine being intoxicating, that it's got an alcohol content. And some of it's pretty high. You can go look at these types of things if you just want to look online or do this. Start seeing. What they've done is through various processes, and these processes help to increase the amount of the alcohol and the they use different terms, proof, and how strong it is, and different things of this nature and circumstances associated with it. And so they use a way and means of accomplishing this. The natural fermentation that's talked about is low. And in fact, they often cut if you read about these things in the background, and I'm not an expert in this, but you can read about individuals that have gone back and researched all this. And I've got some books associated with that describe this. They would cut these various the aspects of these juices with water. The objective there was just simply to be used in various capacities, but it was not intended to make it into an intoxicating drink necessarily. They would do things to accommodate that, to help increase it. They mixed it with other things in some instances that you read about in Proverbs, that mixed drinks. They would increase the content of the alcohol themselves through these various matters, and that's the same thing we talk about today. When we think of wine, we automatically, because of the way it is in our society, we think about it as being that which has to do with alcohol. But that's not the way the Scriptures use it. The context determines that. The context is going to give us the sense of that. And when you start with this idea of why would I even engage in such a practice, why would I want to put myself in a situation vulnerable like that, and then try to use Scripture sometimes to justify it, I think we misapplied the entire principle and the concept. Let me look at a couple of things with you. The Lord's Supper. In Matthew 26, 29, it talks about the fruit of the vine. The fruit of the vine, incidentally, it's not just any fruit off of any vine. It's noted and it's used, if you go back to it, it's grapes. And that very description and arrangement illustrates and shows that they understood it's grapes. It's grape juice, which is what we use on the Lord's Supper. Some translations will say wine. And some talk about this wine that's got an alcohol content. And it's in the Passover. You go back to verse 17. So here's the Lord's Supper, the unleavened bread and the fruit of the vine. It's going to be distributed. And so what about wine and alcohol content and distributing with that with the alcohol? We use grape juice. You know, you get these grapes. You have grape juice that's available to us. And, you know, brushed out grapes that are put in the container things. People can do it individually. If you have this type of thing, you crush your grapes, you have your grapes and you have grape juice. Well, we go in out and purchase it off of the, you know, from the store when it's there and it's got the grape juice, and there's certain things associated with that that we get in order to fulfill that particular command to partake the Lord's Supper and that which represents the blood of Jesus Christ. Well, is it wine that we're talking about that has then alcohol in it? Or even where those translations use that term and talk about fruit of the vine? Or is it just the pure grape juice? The answer is pure grape juice. And how do we know that? Because you go back to Exodus 12, 18 through 20, and when it was set forth, and you go back to the verse 17 of that same chapter, they're observing the Passover. The Passover coincided with the time of unleavened, where leaven was not permitted to be in the houses. Leaven was removed. Yeast is a leaven. The very process which you have in order to take and make then and increase the alcoholic content to turn these grape juice into something that then is through these various processes. Again, I'm not an expert on all the different parts of it, but I do understand the basics of this and how this is to be described and what's done. You do things in order to enable it to become these wines that people want to drink that have alcohol content. Well, yeast and the leavening is removed. There isn't anything. It's just grape juice. They took grape juice. They had grapes around. They drank grapes. Ate grapes. They drank the grape juice and things. Then they had that which became that which was alcohol and content. But in the Lord's Supper, it's during the days when they're of unleavened, when the leavening is removed, and it was done very conscientiously, very specifically. They were very careful about this. And so just like the bread is unleavened, you don't have any of these leavening types of activities associated with even things having to do with the grapes. Let me do one other one. I mean, we could go through all this and discuss various aspects of it. One that sometimes comes up, and Jesus changing water to wine. So you're looking at this type of thing, and we're going to have to do some ascertaining of some things. Wine is used in a general sense, okay? Since it's used in a general sense, how do we determine whether there's alcoholic content that's under consideration? Of course, unless if it says that these people will get drunk off of it, the wine, we know it's alcoholic, right? We know it has that content. If it warns about certain effects adversely, then we understand it's alcoholic in nature and descriptive of that. And there's warnings about that. So I'm going to try to reason with God's Word when a term that's used in a general way that can be alcoholic or non-alcoholic is being under consideration. So I'm going to take this and I'm going to look at the context to make an ask to determine that. So you turn over to John, the second chapter. And in doing this, what we want to do is look and see how the term wine, Jesus changing water to wine, and what did he make it into? In the second chapter, verse 1, on the day, third day, there was a wedding of Canaan in Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Now both Jesus and his disciples were invited to the wedding. And when they ran out of wine, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." Jesus said to her, "Woman, what does your concern have to do with me? My hour is not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Whatever he says to you, do it." It's kind of interesting that she obviously had an understanding that Jesus could do things out of the ordinary that would be miraculous, and not the natural, but supernatural. Anyway, she gave these instructions. Well, hey, we got a problem. We're at this gathering. There's a wedding. This wedding now, somebody didn't make proper provisions. We're out of wine. So I'm going to let my son take care of this, Jesus. Now there were set there 6 water pots of stone according to the manner of purification of the Jews, containing 20 or 30 gallons apiece. Jesus said to them, "Fill the water pots with water," and they filled them up to the brim. He said to them, "Draw some out now and take it to the master of the feast." And they took it. And when the master of the feast had tasted the water that was made wine, and did not know where it came from, but the servants who had drawn the water knew, the master of the feast called the bridegroom. And he said to him, "Every man at the beginning sets out the good wine, and when guests have well drunk, then the inferior. You have kept the good wine until now." This was the beginning of signs Jesus did in Canaan of Galilee, manifested his glory, and his disciples believed him. Now, is there anything in this context that would give us some sense of the nature of the wine that's being described here? Is there anything that we can kind of ascertain that gives us an insight to what's going on? I'm going to try to reason with it. I'm going to try to look at it. I'm going to try to evaluate it. Wine is used in a general, generic way. Well, first thing I take note of is a lot of it's produced, and that it's already been preceded by a goodly amount that's been distributed among the people that are present. Right? And so I'm thinking about this from the standpoint that if this wine is intoxicating, that it has that ability to create that kind of sensation, that you have Jesus involved in a practice in which he's providing things that is encouraging people to partake of something that is contrary to the very thing that's been taught about the warnings of drunkenness and getting intoxicated and the imbibing of those types of activities associated with it. Somebody talks about the taste of it and how it was. Well, when Nancy and I were talking about this one time or recently about this type of thing, you take grapes, you know, grapes, she mentioned, you know, some grapes are kind of more sour in taste, others are more flavorful. While it's true that you go to the store now and you get these various ones that come off the shelf, they're very similar in nature. But when you're making your own type of thing and you're producing that type and you're taking the grapes from various sources in different ways, you're going to get a variety of different flavors attached to that. Because the grapes themselves may be of a better quality in one sense or another. You get all these different things, and the grape juice tasting of that type of situation is going to come out as a result of them making it, producing it, developing. You can have people that are going out there and they're taking the grapes off the things and they're making it up themselves and fixing it up without being intoxicating. I submit to you, this is more along the lines of a punch that you'd have at a gathering when you're at some type of activity, a social event, such as a wedding. You say, "Hey, you got the punch bowl." Now somebody may spike the punch bowl, now they made it alcoholic, but just the regular activity of putting some flavors together like that from some fruit juices doesn't make it alcoholic. And Jesus, if you start looking at this, there's a hard thing to reconcile to think that Jesus would be participating in something that would lead people to do things that would be sinful and wrong. I can't reconcile that in with the Lord and his teaching and his instruction. It just doesn't fit, does it? Both participating and then doing things that would lead people down that line. Which is more logical to conclude when the term wine is used in a general way? That we're talking about grape juice, where somebody can drink it and taste it and have been drinking for a while. You know, one of the things that happens, if you drink enough, you can't even taste things. You don't care anymore. All you want to do this. I had an uncle. He's long since passed away. I guess he's kind of an uncle. It's kind of a story with my dad. He, this probably more like a cousin, but treated like an uncle because of the age difference and things. When I got acquainted with him, by the time I was a little bit older in life, he lived in a different state, but moved in the area. He was a person who was an alcoholic. He was an alcoholic. He would drink to excess, to say the least, and he would crave these drinks in situations and went around. One time he was so desperate because he couldn't get a hold of alcohol that he took something, a tonic of some variety that was more just out of the shelf thing, and he drank that just to get the alcohol in his system. One time he was in a coma for a period of time because he had drank alcohol, and it put him in a coma. He came out of that coma. He finally died because he also smoked, which we could talk about that too. People don't need to be involved in smoking, inhaling that stuff that destroys your body. But get back to the point. He smoked. He got in an alcohol stupor one time, drank. He always drank, so he didn't drink. He kind of passed out on the couch, and he was smoking, and the couch caught fire. And as a consequence, he died from that situation. Why would anybody do any recreational drugs, period, of any variety? What benefit is there? What is the idea behind that one would seek that type of thing? Many people get hooked on various things associated with all these types of things that would not be a problem if they never indulged. I don't want to ever do something that would encourage someone to do that which we know is harmful and destructive to them, when the clear way in which one could go is through that approach that acknowledges and serves the Lord faithfully in that purity of heart and things that we would do. I don't want to adversely affect anybody into thinking that something's okay that would be destructive, that would lead them down the path of sin. And the very participation. You start with what the scriptures say and how it's going to impact. You look at this, and the point going back to, should a Christian drink? It's almost a rhetorical question. Should a Christian engage in recreational drugs? Oh, no. Then if you're not going to engage in recreational drugs, then you put that in the same, that alcohol in the same category, and you've got your answer. It's self-evident that there's not a good reason to participate in something that is so destructive. The number one drug, still to this day, when you think about all these others, if you single one out, alcohol is still the greatest adverse effect upon our society, and it's been in our society, and you go back in Bible times, you look at how it's impacted the lives of people, and it's not good, it's destructive, it's destroyed families, it's destroyed people's lives, it's created all kinds of issues, people with DUI. Again, marijuana is going to fall in that same, has fallen, and more people using it, it's going to fall in that same types of categories. There is no good reason to involve yourself in those kinds of practices. Well, we're going to sing a song of encouragement and talk about pure in heart. Wisdom, as we're about to sing the song of encouragement, one time I heard somebody say wisdom. One definition of it is to see the end from the beginning. If you know up here, if you could, sometimes we look, hindsight's 20/20, right? You get down, if I'd have known that I was going to be down here, I'd never started back here. Wisdom is starting here and realizing that's where that's going to end up. So let's be wise. And not be put behind us the life that previously might have been, if that's something that we've engaged in the past, and certainly not even start if it's something we never practiced. preferable not to have to try to undo what's already been done. If you're not a child of God this very evening, or you need to respond in some way to the Lord's invitation, we're going to give you the opportunity, because the objective is to see the end from the beginning in that heavenly home that awaits us. To make heaven our eternal abode is the thing that we're desirous of more than anything else. And if you stand in need in any way, please make that request known by coming forward as together we stand and sing.